Chapter 4. That's impossible, Ned Stoddard says into the silence that follows Stiles' statement.
Is it actually? Chris asks. Because it seems to me like someone took a bunch of pissed off supernatural creatures and dumped them on this island, telling them that there was going to be hunters here and it was an all-you-can-eat buffet. That werewolf knew Jim. Stands to reason they've met before.
Can we go back to the part where that thing attacked me and broke my arm? Stella shouts.
The hunter who's trying to get her arm splinted winces as she shouts right in his ear.
You were shooting at his packmate, Mikhail says. You were lucky he didn't rip your arm right the hell off.
It's not my fault that animal got in my way.
Yes, how dare he try to protect you from the werewolf that was about to tear your face off, Chris says sarcastically.
He looks at Scott and says, really, you should have known better.
I'll keep it in mind for the future, Scott says, not looking up from Mikhail's nephew.
Stella, your arm is gonna be fine. Now shut the fuck up, Vanessa says.
All the shouting has attracted attention, and the other hunters are coming into the lodge to see what happened.
I think Stiles is right. Someone who had access to your prison got these creatures here, and they're pretty clearly pissed off about having been incarcerated. So why don't you call your guys and see if they can tell you exactly who escaped?
Fine, Jim mutters, rubbing his jaw.
He pulls out his phone, taps the screen a few times, frowns, taps it a few more times.
No signal.
Well, Christ, that's convenient, isn't it? Hannah says, sounding disgusted.
Check your own goddamn phone if you don't believe me.
Jim snaps. I've got no signal.
Several people do, in fact, pull out their phones. Stiles is one of them. His two bars are now at one. He tries to dial the police station in Beacon Hills, tries to dial Veronica, tries a few more numbers. None of the calls go through.
Great, he says. Isolation, step two.
Then we'd better get a list of all the occupants of your prison, Julian says, so we know who or what we might end up dealing with and can plan accordingly.
Ned gives a little grimace.
That might not be feasible, he says reluctantly.
And why is that? Chris asks.
When Julian and I went to visit, there were, I'd say, about 2 dozen inmates. Surely you can remember 2 dozen monsters.
Jim clears his throat.
It's more than that.
How many more?
Cora asks, her voice tight.
Probably about 200, Ned says.
Jesus Christ on a stripper pole! Stiles says. 200? That's even worse than I imagined. And let me tell you, I've got a pretty vivid imagination.
There's no way that they're all here, Jim says.
No, they aren't, Stiles says. He sees Sally in the crowd, sees the coy little smile on her face.
Only the ones who want revenge. Whoever let them out either only took those people he or she felt were properly motivated, or he or she emptied the whole damn thing, but most people headed for the hills. We've got no way of knowing which. On the upside, the people who want revenge are likely to be the ones you've pissed off the worst. So they might be the most memorable. So let's start there.
Who was the werewolf in the woods?
Mikhail asks, his voice tight and angry. Jim glowers silently for a minute, then says,
Caleb Coleman. I captured him and his whole pack about 8 months ago. Nearly a dozen. And don't feel sorry for them. That asshole had a long rap sheet. He was bad long before I ever put him in jail.
We'll have to take your word on it, Stiles says, since I conveniently can't call any of my contacts.
Jim ignores him. The ghouls have been there a couple years. They're tough bastards. We were trying to test the limits of their endurance.
What about the sorcerers?
Jim shrugs. I don't remember any of them particularly well.
That's fairly obviously a bald-faced lie, but Stiles decides to tackle it later. How many people had access to your prison?
A dozen, maybe, Jim says. Most of them are still there, presumably. I mean, they aren't attending the conclave.
Stiles nods, thinking things over. Okay, he says. Let's do this, providing you're all willing. Scott, you and Deaton will coordinate medical care for the wounded. Dad, you are the best cop I know. Sit down with Mr. Stoddard here and pick his brain about the prison. The way it was set up, who might have had access. He's sure it was Sally who had gotten the prisoners out, but they're going to have to prove that, and he can't do that without more information. Chris, Mikhail, will you handle fortifying the lodge? From now on, no one comes in or out. And we're going to need a strong perimeter guard. We don't know who all is out there.
What do we do about the staff? Wednesday asks. We've got fucking bodies piling up. They're gonna notice.
We'll keep all the bodies in the same room and tell them not to go in, Jim says. That'll keep them from finding out, at least for now.
Tom clears his throat.
It doesn't take long for a dead body to start to smell, he says, and we can't exactly put them on ice. If you have a better suggestion, Jim says, impatient, and Tom sighs.
Actually, we can put them on ice, I think, Scott says. I mean, Jackson does all that ice and cold magic. Maybe he can turn a room into a freezer for us. I'll talk to him. I think he's with Dr. Deaton.
Good idea, Chris says. Mikhail, would you rather stay with your nephew until the bite takes? He asks.
Mikhail stands up and shakes his head.
I'd rather keep busy. I'll send someone to get you if his condition changes, Scott says.
Mikhail nods.
I appreciate it, he says,
and then adds, and thank you for helping him.
He looks at Cora and says, thank you, too.
Yeah, Cora says, and then looks surprised when Mikhail embraces her.
It's the most awkward hug that Stiles has ever seen, but he's not going to argue. Progress is progress.
Cora pats Mikhail on the back and then weasels out of his embrace.
Come on, Stiles says. Let's go check on the others. Isaac, Erica, I want you to stay with Scott, just in case anything happens.
He gives Stella a significant and wholly unnecessary look. She scowls back at him. Erica gives her a sharp-toothed grin, and she turns on her heel and storms off.
What are we going to do?
Derek asks, as Stiles heads up the stairs.
We're going to have a chat with Sally, Stiles says.
He's got his phone out and is tapping the screen. It's easier said than done. It takes almost an hour to find Sally, who isn't in her room or any of the public rooms. It seems unlikely that she would be outside. They finally track her down in one of the upstairs hallways, sitting in one of the bay windows overlooking the back deck and the ocean. Her lips curve in a smile when she sees them.
Hey, Stiles, she says.
Hey, Sally, he replies. Want to tell us how many monsters you brought here to kill us? Sally blinks at him guilelessly.
Huh? You know, your uncle's prison, Stiles says. The one you took over, opened a door from, and funneled a bunch of people and or monsters out of?
Sally just continues to smile at him.
Is that where the ghouls came from? Uncle Jim's prison?
You would know, Stiles says. It's obvious that she knows he's recording the conversation, but if he can keep her talking, she might give something away.
Ugh, no, Sally says with a theatrical shudder. I haven't been there in years. It's such an awful place. I don't like to go there, so I asked Daddy to stop making me.
And Daddy's little girl gets whatever she wants, huh? Stiles says.
I am definitely Daddy's little girl, Sally says, grinning at him.
Then she snaps her fingers. Stiles jumps as he feels his phone vibrate in his pocket. He grabs it and sees a blank screen. He presses the power button, but nothing happens.
Son of a bitch,
he mutters, and glances at Derek, who gives a quick shake of his head to indicate that his phone is dead, too.
So, do you want to know? Sally asks.
Stiles sighs.
Yeah, Sally, I want to know. Do you really want to know?
It takes effort, but Stiles doesn't try to throttle her.
Yes, I really want to know. 13 ghouls, 11 werewolves, 2 warlocks, and
Oh, a special surprise. I can't give that away ahead of time.
Son of a bitch, Styles says again.
Nope, Sally says cheerfully. Daughter of a bastard. Oh, and to spice things up, all the attendees have been assigned point values. Hunters are worth 10 points, beta werewolves are worth 20, any member of the Hunter Council is 50 points, and so is any alpha werewolf. And you, Styles, are worth a whopping 100 points. So I'd be careful if I were you. The ghouls are winning, of course, though Caleb's pack made up some of the difference today. Dante hasn't even made his first move yet, and trust me, it'll be a doozy. And there's still 6 days left. Anything could happen.
Styles considers her for a long minute, and then says, how about your dad? How many points is he worth?
Oh, he's worth 50 points as well.
Sally says, her tone matter of fact.
He might not be on the Hunter Council, but he's very good at what he does. I assigned a few hunters extra points for that reason. Lord knows that not everybody on the council is worth 50, like Stella Jones and that marshmallow of an agent that's in charge of Henry's old territory. But it was too complicated to do individual points values for everyone.
What's the prize? Styles asks.
I mean, what does the winner get?
My unending admiration, Sally says, and then gives a peal of laughter.
And an all-expenses-paid trip to the fifth circle of hell. They don't know that yet, though.
Jesus, Sally, Styles says. You're the actual worst. This doesn't faze Sally a bit.
Good luck in the game, Styles, she says, waving at him.
And he turns to walk away.
I hate her so much, Styles mutters, twining his fingers through Derek's as they head back to their rooms.
It's too crowded to fit everyone in there, so Styles tells both his pack, the Alpha Pack, and Jackson to meet in the game room in 10 minutes. Then he goes to check in with Chris, who says things are well underway. Scott is still with Mikhail's nephew, who's doing better and breathing without help. Scott wants to stay with him, so Styles leaves him to it. He still doesn't want Scott left alone after what happened, so Isaac and Erica stick with him. The bodies have all been kept in the conference room, which is now about 30 degrees. Jackson says he can't keep it that way indefinitely, but it'll buy them some time. He'd like to have Wednesday and Sam at the meeting, but they're busy with their hunters. Sketch shows up, though, so at least he can carry news back to Wednesday.
So wait, Justin says, halfway into Styles' explanation. If there's a band of werewolves in the forest, why don't you let us go take care of them? 7 alphas versus 11 betas? Those are odds I'd take on any day. And have. Repeatedly.
Yeah, how's it sound once you add 10 ghouls, 2 sorcerers, and the Sally Stoddard special? Styles asks.
Not even to mention that if you win and head back towards the lodge covered in blood, 40 different hunters will try to shoot you in the face. I'd much prefer we all stay here, warm and dry and unshot.
Good point, Yasmin says, nudging Justin in the ribs.
And that's assuming that the 11 werewolves are betas. Derek adds, all Sally said was 11 werewolves. Odds are good that there's an alpha or two in the mix somewhere.
It is possible for an alpha to hide their presence, even from us, Ravender agrees. More to the point, Sally said this man's name was Caleb, did she not? I believe I know to whom she is referring. An alpha we tested some years back, before your time, he adds to Justin. He passed the trials under Trevor's tenure. An unlikable individual. We had no qualms about how he treated his pack, but it would not surprise me to hear that he had been abusing his power.
Great! Allison huffs out a sigh. It's totally possible that there was an alpha out there today. It was really chaotic. It would have been easy to miss.
I don't suppose you know how many pack members Caleb had, Styles says to Ravender. He shakes his head.
11 would be a medium-sized pack for a strong alpha, but that's assuming that all his wolves survived their imprisonment, and that seems pretty unlikely. It's possible that some of these werewolves Sally brought along aren't affiliated with him. So yeah, at the moment, I'm going to have to vote for staying here. Okay, but what's our long-term game plan? Justin asks. Because I don't really dig sit around and wait for other people to deal with it.
Well, it's not exactly my idea of a tea party either, Stiles says. We'll see what my dad can find out about our unexpected guests. But there's somebody else I want information from. My guess is that there are a few people who knew these people were coming, who were waiting with bated breath to use this as an excuse to shut down the whole not all werewolves thing.
Like Stella Jones? Derek asks, scowling.
Stiles' eyes momentarily flash crimson, but he shuts it down fast.
Yeah, she's been right on us, demanding to know why we aren't saving their asses at every opportunity. Agnes St. James is another. She's here, but we've barely seen her, which is unusual for her. She's up to something. And the Gutierrez family. $5 says they're involved somehow.
Cora's scowl now matches Derek's in a manner that would be cute under other circumstances.
What are we going to do about it?
And what about the Stoddards? Lydia asks. How much do you think they know?
Ned seems genuinely surprised at the idea that their prison had a breach, Stiles says.
Jim, I'm not as sure about, but I'll let my dad handle him.
As for the others, he huffs out a breath.
Damn it, I wish Ian was here. He'd make a great spy. I guess I can't blame him for not wanting to visit an island full of hunters, but it would be damn useful to have him around.
Derek grimaces, hand rubbing idly at the back of Stiles' neck.
We need someone who can talk to them on our behalf, who can pretend to be their ally.
I'll do it, a voice says, and Stiles' head twists around to see Annika standing in the door.
Shit! How long have you been there?
He asks, thinking about everything he said about Sally Stoddard in the previous 20 minutes.
Since the beginning, asshole, Annika says. You need someone who can pretend to be on their side. I'm your woman. Everyone saw us fighting during the last conclave, and it'd be easy for me to say that I think Jonas's death was your fault.
Yeah, about that.
Annika's expression doesn't change.
I know why you didn't tell me, she says. I know Dad probably asked you not to. He's been terrified he'll lose me ever since he got hurt. But he can't keep me in a glass jar. I won't go try to bust Sally's skull in. But if the goal is to kill her, I'm on board. So let me help.
Stiles nods.
Okay. Jonas's death is my fault. I humiliated him at the conclave. He started fighting with his dad, tried to have him killed, and when he got caught...
Annika nods.
And Stella knows. She knew all along.
I never figured out how, Stiles admits. Stella had made a comment or two that implied she had known about Jonas's involvement.
She was pretty tight with Arya and Nazario, Annika says. They probably talked about it. The guy who took the shot was one of Stella's guys, after all. I bet he came at her recommendation. Anyway, I can start with Stella. See what I can find out.
Okay, Stiles says. He almost says, be careful, but then decides that Annika would probably punch him in the face if he said that. If she can get Stella on board, she can probably talk to Agnes, too. The Gutierrez family are going to be a harder nut to crack. He'll have to deal with that as it comes.
Tom Stilinski has dealt with a lot of unhelpful witnesses in his time on the police force. He's dealt with people who are too traumatized to talk about what happened to them. He's talked to smug bastards who are sure they got away with their crime. He's handled people who just hate the police on general principle. And he's worked with people who feel like whatever's happening is a complete waste of their time. Jim Stoddard is one of the fourth variety, almost definitely. One hand taps at the table incessantly, and he occasionally pauses to heave a sigh like he can't quite believe this is happening to him. Tom is thinking about how to handle this, because the answer probably isn't to say, if you roll your eyes at me one more time, I'll roll your head across the room. He decides to come at him head on.
So, why did you bring a bunch of monsters to the conclave?
That gets Jim to blink, then he scoffs.
You think I brought these guys here?
Well, I certainly think you're the most likely, Tom says.
You had motive, means, and opportunity. which puts you far past most of the other people I could name. Stella Jones, Agnes St. James, they might have wanted to ruin the party, but they aren't the one whose prison supplied the guests. Now, are they? Look, I'll be frank with you, Mr. Stolinski. Sheriff Stolinski. Jim waves this correction aside. I don't give a rat's ass about this conclave. A bunch of bleeding hearts are going to get together and weep and moan over the good werewolves that they want to protect. They can make whatever decision they want. I don't care what other people do on their territory as long as they don't tell me what to do on mine. Tom keeps a blank face and an even voice. But that's the point we're coming to, isn't it? He says. The point where people are going to start making you justify your actions and demand accountability. They can demand whatever they want. That doesn't mean I have to comply. Tom sits back in his chair. I see. You think I'm an idiot. Jim frowns. I don't. No, apparently you don't, Tom says. You think I have no idea how hunting works. You think that I'm completely oblivious to the fact that you depend on your backers, that your day job of a security company is intrinsically linked to your hunting enterprises. You think that I can be convinced you're invincible just because you talk a good game. Jim's mouth tightens into a thin line. Here's what I know, Mr. Stoddard. There are 11 members of the Hunter Council, and 6 of them are quite firmly in Chris Argent's camp. Angela Peretti and Hannah Winchester keep abstaining, but if they're forced to give an opinion, they won't swing your way. Peretti is known to work with werewolves, and Winchester is fine with the fact that there are dozens of born wolf families living on the plains under the "you don't bother me, I won't bother you" philosophy, which leaves you with Jones and St. James. Not much of a showing. So what, you say? They can do whatever they want as long as they don't force you to agree. And yet, here you sit, at the conclave you are hosting, forced to have accept all these extra invitees. I know that you didn't want my son here, let alone the Alpha Pack, but the others forced you to allow it. You're not immune to pressure. You'd like me to believe that nobody will hold you accountable for anything, but that isn't true. These guys talk to each other. They talk to their backers. Their backers talk to each other. Chris works in the same field you do, and so does Julian. They could choke off your business if they wanted to. So if you're quite done trying to convince me of how special you are, how about you answer a few of my questions? Jim's been trying to stare Tom down during this monologue. It hasn't worked. He breaks first, his gaze flicking to the side. Then he shoves back from the table and folds his arms over his chest. What do you want to know? Let's start with the location of your prison. That's need to know only. And here I thought we had been making some progress, Tom says. Do you think the distance to your prison is irrelevant? If we're going to figure out who's here, it might be helpful to figure out how they got here. Did they get on a Greyhound? Take a plane? Could they have walked? It's 300 miles from here, Jim snaps. Nobody walked. Okay, could they have flown? How should I know? Tom prays for patience and says, as if talking to a child, is there an airfield there? Yes. Is there one anywhere near here? Maybe. I don't know. Tom studies him for a minute. Werewolves and warlocks could have gotten here by car or bus, but a group of ghouls would have been noticed, if they would even fit in a car, which I doubt. That means magic is the most likely option, isn't it? I suppose so. So let's start with the people who had access to your prison, who also have the capability to do magic, Tom says. Jim scoffs. There aren't any. Tom's eyebrows go up. Really? I don't like magic users, Jim says. They can't be trusted. They're basically supernatural creatures themselves. Sure, they've got more human in them than most, but they aren't wholly human, and nobody can convince me otherwise. I use them on occasion, if I'm fighting a warlock and it can't be helped, but for day-to-day work, I don't employ them. Are you telling me that your prison has no magical protections on it? It does. They were put on by a druid back when it was first built. That was done by my mother, and the druid in question has been dead 30 years. Doesn't that need to be renewed periodically? Jim shrugs. Not the way he did it.
Tom studies him for a minute, before deciding to let it go. He's not sure enough of how magic works to challenge him on that point, and he doesn't want Jim to decide he's an idiot again.
Okay, let's move on to the other people who had access.
Jim clearly thinks this is a waste of time, but at least he cooperates, listing off the people who worked at the prison on a regular basis, who was responsible for transporting prisoners, who worked security. Tom asks some follow-up questions about these people, about whether or not any of them had reason to want the Conclave to fail, how much money they made, where they lived, who their families were.
That's it? He asks, after they've gone through 8 different people.
That's it.
What about your family?
What about them?
Well, I assume that you and Ned had regular access, Tom says.
What about your wife?
She's not involved in hunting.
Okay, your sister?
She isn't either. She's not even here.
Mm-hmm.
What about your kids?
Jim scoffs. None of them are old enough to have orchestrated anything like that.
I wouldn't be so sure of that, Tom says. I saw your 2 kids at dinner last night. They're what, 15, 16? Styles was old enough to get into plenty of trouble by then. And then there's your niece.
Who, Sally?
Jim actually laughs.
Yeah, sure. Ned had to bribe her with a new iPhone just to get her to this damn thing.
Look, she's a sweet girl, but she's a complete airhead. She went to the prison twice, maybe, back when Ned was still trying to get her to give a damn, and then refused to go back because it was, and I quote, creepy.
But she has been there, Tom says.
Jim shrugs.
Yeah, so what?
Probably nothing. Tom stretches a little. Let's talk about the inmates.